Hello, I'm with Jacob Frond. I think I've pronounced that right. Or Jacob, for those who are not pronouncing it in German. And he's the CEO of Camunda. Now, Jacob, you have an interesting perspective on business processes, the ones that we've all grown up to love, you know, like order to cash. That's the one I know most about. Mm-hmm. And a pretty important one. I think there was an example in your in the keynote session this morning. What's wrong with them at the moment?
I would say what they all have in common. I mean, I wouldn't say they're wrong in that sense, right? They got us where we are today. But in today's world of AI now coming around, they are basically missing an opportunity. So they were designed for a world without AI, arguably, like just a few years ago. And now that AI is here and it's omnipresent and we can leverage it to be a lot more effective, to be a lot more efficient, we have to not just inject it like into here and there of an existing order to cash process, for example, but we just have to really rethink how that process really works structurally so that we can then fully leverage this magnitude, the step change of productivity with AI. Like that's in that sense, it's not wrong. Mm. It's just not a good fit anymore for today's world.
And there was an example in the keynote today, mm-hmm. which looked at your own quote to cash
exactly.
process.
Yes.
I'll get that right.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through what is the quote to cash process
mm-hmm.
and why you felt it was there was a need to rethink it?
Yeah, sure. I would say, like, again, a great example, right? It's not that the quote to cash process was broken anyway. So we've been operating with that process for years now, and our business is like substantial. So we have more than 600 customers. They run Camunda for mission critical processes. So in that sense, it sustains profitably like a business of more than 600 people that work here at the company. So in that sense, the process of providing a quote to a customer, then negotiating and agreeing on the contract, then invoicing that customer and then following up in order to make sure that the cash actually lands in the bank account. That process has been there and has been effective. However, now in the age of AI, we see the opportunity to make that process a whole lot more both effective and efficient so we can scale the business further without needing to grow the headcount respectively. So in that sense, we see that opportunity more than the problem.
I mean, forgive me if I've got the wrong end of the stick, because I often do get the wrong end of the stick, but it was more than just removing inefficiencies like in paper, manual or paper-based processing. There was something else. Certainly, it looked like you or the business actually did something completely differently, turned that process on its head thanks to agentic AI. And there was another term that I think came across in the keynote, and there's a Forrester paper that looks at this. It's called, you know, the orchestration and having sort of deterministic, mm-hmm. which basically means it's programmable. There's a defined set of steps, right?
True.
Can you explain to our audience why it's not simply replacing simple manual interventions with automation, which was, I think, what robotic process automation mm-hmm. tried to do, and intelligent automation kind of added to that. But yes. this is a bit different.
Yes. That's fair, actually. That's a fair observation. And there's a few aspects here. So to pick up the last one, you mentioned agentic orchestration, so where we can now drive work across multiple steps, actually, automatically, much more than before, because we can now actually also automate the kind of work that required human judgment before, right? Mm. So we needed human case workers that would decide what should happen in a certain process next. Now we can actually let an LLM decide on that and then carry that work out. So that is basically what agentic orchestration allows us now to do, that LLM-driven kind of work control paired with deterministic, so in that sense programmatic, workflows, which then makes sure that in situations where we cannot just rely on the LLM's judgment, we really have laid out and defined how work is supposed to happen under certain circumstances. So it gives us both the dynamic orchestration, so the LLM-driven orchestration, mm-hmm. as well as the guardrails and governance of deterministic workflow-driven orchestration.
And with that, you've been able to rethink how you approach this particular business process.
Exactly, exactly. So with that in mind, together with also certain architectural decisions, we were able to increase massively the degree of automation in that process. So where beforehand we had a number of people that would need to like carry out certain tasks, like, you know, generating a quote, sending that quote over, waiting for a certain like time to receive an answer, potentially then like revisit that quote, all the way to then eventually making sure the data lands in the like the invoicing system. So we're using Salesforce and NetSuite and other systems, right? So all of that has to somehow flow through our systems. All of that now is to a much higher degree automated and also made easier to use for our own people, because they don't have to go into all those systems anymore. We have basically streamlined all of that into our own chat system, which is Slack in our case.
Yes.
So we like to use Slack. So in that sense, our people don't need to log into Salesforce anymore or into NetSuite in order to perform the work for that order or quote to cash process. They just interact with the process via Slack, which is very convenient as well.
Jakob, but what I was thinking about, and I might have got this wrong again. This is me getting the wrong end of the stick twice in this conversation. You have, I don't know if you call them account managers, but you changed the sort of oversight or the view of the whole process that gives them much more, you know, they have much more visibility.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is what I was hinting at. So, yeah, we call them account executives. So, yes, but yeah, of course, that kind of role. So the people that work with our clients, you could say in sales, but in our case, it is not just transactional sales where they would like, you know, hit and run.
Yes,
but they
yes.
really want to make sure that the customer is successful and effectively enabled to grow then also the relationship over time. So those account executives are now much better enabled to have full visibility into how that process is flowing, to make sure any friction points are surfaced very early on and can then be removed. And they, again, can do that right from where they are today anyway, which is a Slack system, not needing to, like, you know, navigate all these different user interfaces of different systems.
Okay, just moving on a bit. So one of the things that struck me about the presentation, and it was a very good presentation about new system that you've got in place. Forgive me, I can't remember the name of it. What's it called again? It's this new thing that you've built.
Process OS.
Process OS.
The operating system for your business processes. Exactly.
Yes, Process OS. Is that, well, particularly in the example that you have used internally, you're looking at the how much sort of functionality is provided within the existing enterprise software suites that you use, like Salesforce and NetSuite. There are other ones as well. Now, what does that mean specifically? I mean, are these products doing less for you? I mean, I know we have this thing called the system of record, and everyone wants to be the system of record, right?
No, not us.
not you.
Yeah.
But there is a sense that if you're rethinking how those products that you have to pay for, you license, I mean, they're SaaS products, but you're still effectively paying for them, how they will be used in the future. Because that's interesting, not just to you internally as a business, but I guess to your customers.
Yeah, that's exactly also how we look at that, right? So we're going through that transformation ourselves, knowing that our customers going through that kind of transformation as well. So in that sense, we're also just, like, you know, picking up certain learnings that we can then also pass on to our customers. And one of them is the architecture, to your point. So I was just jokingly saying that we don't want to be the system of record, because we want to be the system of process. So, right? And those are two different things, because a process, an end-to-end process, usually spans across multiple systems of record. So if you tie yourself into or to a certain ERP system like SAP or CRM system like Salesforce, etc., then you're always containing yourself in a certain box, if you will. However, almost any enterprise out there is using more than just one system of record. So it makes sense for them to have an independent orchestration layer that runs a agentic or deterministic or both end-to-end process across those systems of record. And now to pick up your question, what this thing happening right now, not just with us, that's the reason why Salesforce, for example, announced that they're going headless and exposing their functions via MCP, et cetera, because now increasingly those functions are consumed not so much by humans, but by agents, right, to perform work automatically. So in that sense, the functions are still there. They're still valuable, as is the data storage, if you will, within those systems of record. But when it comes to the interface, that's where the shift really is happening, where the human user interface is becoming less relevant, and it's more an agentic interface or agentic user interface that is becoming very much relevant. And then the agents again encapsulate that, so I as a human can have a conversation, right, with my agent saying, hey, what are our customers in London like, you know, that are above a certain certain revenue, and what's the last meeting with them, and maybe we should like, you know, build on that. If I'm asking that my agent and it's giving me that answer, having interacted with Salesforce as an example now in the background, technically via MCP.
I guess these systems of records don't want to be systems of record. They want to be seen as the core business thing, the front end of the business. And I think there must be some kind of an arms race going on where, particularly when I speak to SAP or to Oracle or to Salesforce, I'm sure that they will say, well, you know, we have all of these functionalities. We have agentic AI. We have a platform. You know, we have this system. And it's, you know, joined up, and it's, you know, they've got a great ecosystem. It all works together. But I guess that's not really a platform. It's a vertically integrated piece of software.
I would agree. And I mean, we have seen like the promise of the one-stop shop, like the one system that would rule them all, and you would only need this one system. We had that promise already in the 90s, like, you know, from ERP vendors, for example. Looking at the industry today, I see very few examples where that's actually the case.
Yes.
So pretty much always we're seeing an SAP plus a Salesforce plus a ServiceNow plus a Workday or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think as an organization, as a bank or insurance, I'm well advised to have a automation architecture blueprint that is able to leverage those systems of record, but does not contain yourself to them, so that you retain that flexibility and can actually like combine the best of breed products with each other as it makes sense to yourself.
I wonder if we're going to get to a stage, because in the 90s and early 2000s there was a stage where big customers of the likes of SAP and Oracle were running into difficulties when they did integration. This is I don't know what they were generally call it, but it's indirect licensing. And I can see that evolving with MCP. It can't just be integration, it'll be something else. Because if the system is only being used by an AI rather than a person, and potentially that AI can answer more pertinent questions. It won't be hitting the systems many times. It may ask one question that gets all that data back.
Yes.
All the data it requires, because it knows the exact question to ask the database.
Fair. Yeah, it's interesting.
There will be less use. The system will still provide the data because it's a system of record, right? But it'll be used less.
Potentially. Or the question is if it can, let's say,
or put it the other way and be used tons of times.
Yeah. Or maybe, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's always a fair exchange of value, right? So a certain system brings me a certain value of any kind, and I'm ready to part with parts of my funds in exchange.
So, but you could almost, you know, you could have an LLM that says, well, I need to find out this thing about the customer. And I've got an Oracle system, and I've got an SAP system, I've got an Oracle system, and I've got another CRM system, Salesforce. What's the most cost-effective way for me to find the right answer to this? Knowing, you know, if IT procurement's all joined up, one be able to say, well, you know, Salesforce has this data, and Oracle has this data, or SAP has this data, and you know, the most cost-effective way to get this transaction is, you know, this convoluted route. And in fact, we've probably got some of this data here already because someone's already asked for part of that information. So we don't need to do the SQL query or whatever it is again.
Fair. And that's actually also where, when we look at the, like in our own case, we have this open orchestration architecture blueprint. Mm. And it's not just like now Kamunda's point of view, as you can see that in the industry as well. There's usually now the concept coming up of a context layer that sits even on top of the systems of record again.
Yes.
And is the canonical single source of truth for those entities. So what is a custom? What is an invoice? What is an order?
Yeah.
So it's an extra layer that is fed, so to speak, with the data from the underlying systems, but brings them together because they're often also inconsistent or redundant.
Yeah.
So then you have like this this clear representation of a customer, for example, no matter like you know where the underlying data comes from, that then processes and agents operate on in order to like have the data they need to execute. Which brings us back to your initial question: okay, what is the value then that system of records still provide?
Yes.
And how like you know how would they make money in this in this sort of setup, right? And honestly, I believe that remains to be seen. So I'm pretty sure that there's a tremendous amount of value in certain functionalities that they still provide, in the ability to capture certain data over time, interpret that intelligently. So there's still a trough of value in those systems. It's just not the traditional like architecture, where everything comes from the same vendor.
Well, I'm sure that the customers of those systems recognize the need for these companies to make money, but what they don't want to see is almost to be ripped off and to be overcharged for things.
Sure. Which is why vendor lock-in is a real thing that, that customers want to avoid, right?
Yes, so, yeah.
Exactly.
But when you're talking about the architecture, I did have a laugh because, I mean, I'm old enough to have covered and written about the Enterprise Service Bus. Mm, do you remember that?
And of course.
It was very elegant.
I'm old enough, yes.
Yeah, old enough to remember the Enterprise.
For sure.
You know, lots of little boxes and a communication layer and I wonder, but you know, people never finish building these things. And you can talk to, I mean, I'm sure you've seen customers saying, well, we've got this great thing that took us 10 years to build and we're not going to change that quickly, just like they don't change their system of record.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it never ends really, right? So as long as there's innovation happening and there are new things coming up that have to be, again, somehow integrated into your business, there will always be this need for solving the integration challenge. And there's different patterns and different implementations of them. But of course, also history, as we say, doesn't repeat, but rhymes. So in that sense, of course, certain patterns that we have already seen with ESB back in the days now, of course, we're also seeing when it comes to like how to bring those data together.
Mm.
But still, I would argue that we're going through these innovation cycles. So what is available today is then again also more powerful than what we had seen 20 years ago with the Enterprise Service Bus, for example.
Fantastic. Well, Jakob, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It's a pleasure.
And thank you very much for tuning in. You can find the full article on www.computerweekly.com and the podcast on iTunes and Amazon Music.